I always bring up weather at the top of the show because I want everyone to kind of look around their own space. Wherever you are, listening around the country, around the world to the show, I'd love for you to kind of get in your present moment. What's your weather like? What's going on in the air around you, which will help you move your energy positively and take in whatever you learn from this show and allow it to be a catalyst in your life. And of course, we do have a guest today who happens to be in New York right now.
Perfect.
But he's from Seattle.
It all ties together.
It all ties together. So we'll find out in a few moments exactly what the weather's like in New York right now. But Robert Taylor, who happened to be speaking at Bastyr University about a month and a half ago with one of my dear friends, Dr. Merritt, they were on a panel talking about spirituality and medicine at, you know, the famous Bastyr University here. And Dr. Merritt called me afterwards and said, oh my gosh, you have to check out Robert Taylor. He was wonderful. And of course I did. And we became Facebook friends. And then, of course, I invited him on the show and he agreed. So Robert Taylor is a nationally known leader who is openly gay, white South African Episcopal priest, who has navigated being part of the religious establishment while also being an outsider. Sent to the United States in 1980 by his mentor, Archbishop Desmond Tutu, to avoid imprisonment for his anti-apartheid activity, Robert Taylor has spent a lifetime integrating personal spirituality with the question of how each of us can leave a footprint of compassion in the world. Robert's leadership of one of the largest Episcopal congregations in the United States combined engaging spirituality with a focus on personal and public action. He has worked for more than 20 years to end homelessness in New York and Seattle and served as a mentor between government and activity groups to help them resolve seemingly intractable problems. Robert also hosts the Jai Tu Monks of His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, on a two-week-long visit in the residential Seattle. Robert has been at the forefront of creating inter-spiritual dialogue and relationship building. He co-founded Faith Forward, a multi-faith interactive for people of many spiritual traditions, focusing on the environment and poverty issues. He also helped create Seeds of Compassion. I actually am very familiar with that, and many of my friends participated in that as well. A week-long event in Seattle in 2008, which drew over 150,000 attendants and resulted in the Seeds of Compassion Network to help foster increasing compassion in society. He recently appeared together in Seattle with His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, and Desmond Tutu. So welcome, Robert, to the show.
Well, thank you, Marie. It's just such a pleasure to be on your show. I love it, and I'm a great fan of your friend, Sheila Meritz, as well. And it was wonderful to speak at Bastyr University a while ago with her. It was a lively, amazing panel and an incredibly engaged audience.
Wonderful. Well, you know, Bastyr students and the community, they're very interested in health and healing and spirituality. And I'm sure they loved having you there as well. And so you're in New York. What's the temperature like?
Well, you know, I got here yesterday and it was just, the rain was coming down. It felt as though I, you know, I wasn't far from Seattle. And today it was kind of a little sunny, but as I walked over to the place where I'm using the phone to be on your show, it started raining again. So so who knows? I'm looking forward to being back in Seattle on Saturday, though.
Cooled off right after I left.
It cooled off after Eric left,
yeah,
just for
yeah.
your visit, which we're thrilled for, because, you know, the rain is a little bit more comfortable than, of course, a lot of heat. And so you're there for meetings, you know, meetings to go along with you and your relationship with Desmond Tutu.
I am.
Yeah.
I am the incoming chair of the Desmond Tutu Peace Foundation, which works to foster his legacy, and we work in collaboration with our colleagues in South Africa who are building a Desmond Tutu Peace Center around practices of reconciliation and transformative leadership. So it's an exciting project. It's a wonderful board of people from around the country, and we meet quarterly in New York, and that meeting is, I have some meetings tonight, and then we meet as a board all day tomorrow.
Well, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to hang out with us on the radio. Really
it's a joy to be
it.
With you.
Wonderful. So you were born in South Africa, actually. Is that true?
I was.
Yeah.
I was born in Cape Town, South Africa, which is just a spectacularly physically beautiful city, and lived there until I left South Africa as a political exile in 1980. So the first 22 years of my life were spent there, and this December I will mark my 30th anniversary of arriving in the United States. So I've actually spent more of my life in the U.S. at this point, but I think it's fair to say that some of my experiences in South Africa really shaped who I am as a person, the work that I've done around reconciliation, and my experiences of healing. So
right.
And what it means to really honor the holy or the divine in one another as human beings.
So beautifully well said. And from when did you know that you wanted to be a priest? I mean, when did that happen for you?
You know, I think it was when I was 16. I was in my second to last year in high school, and actually my best friend and I both believed that we wanted to be priests, and we both were actually accepted onto that ordination track in our last year of high school, which, you know, as I look back, seems to me inconceivable that somebody would have said to a graduating senior, yep, you can be on this track.
Wow.
So we went off to college, and he ultimately decided not to pursue that route. But I did, and went to college in South Africa and worked, and then left South Africa as a political exile, both because of my anti-apartheid activity, but primarily because of my refusal to serve in the South African military, which during the time of apartheid was really, the military was used to enforce the will of a minority on the majority of the country. And So military service was compulsory for a two-year period for all white males, and then you gave anywhere from 3 weeks to 2 months of each year after that. I think until about the age of 50, you could be called up every year for that length of time to help reinforce the really devastating and horrific and dehumanizing policies of apartheid. And I had actually made a decision that I was going to go to jail. There was no conscientious objection at the time. And Desmond Tutu, who I had gotten to know and had done some work with, said to me, absolutely not. There's no purpose to be served. And he arranged for me to really flee South Africa and leave pretty hurriedly. And with the help of a wonderful friend working in the U.S. Consulate in Cape Town, we got my academic transcripts and all sorts of other data sent in a diplomatic pouch to the States. And about 7 or 8 days later, I was on a plane to New York. I'd never been out of Africa before.
Wow.
I arrived in New York City on December the 5th of 1980 and was astounded that such cold weather could exist anywhere. And found myself welcomed into the home and family of people who I'd never met. And there I was as an exile and an immigrant in a country that was foreign to me and that has become my home.
Right. And what brought you to Seattle?
I came to Seattle in 1999 to be dean of St. Mark's Cathedral.
Oh, wow.
A work and a job that I just loved and relished and delighted in, and resigned from that position 2 years ago. And I'm now writing. As you know, I have a book that's headed to publication. I'm blogging. I've got a blogging site that's called wakeupforlife.com. And it really reflects a lot of the speaking that I'm doing around the country, both in terms of lectures and workshops and other speaking engagements. Helping people to discover ways of becoming more fully alive and acknowledging and celebrating the holy that exists in each of us. So it's a wonderful time in my life, and I'm thoroughly enjoying it.
Right, right. And the book that you're writing, or it's on its way to publication, A New Way to Be Human, Seven Spiritual Pathways to Becoming Fully Alive. It sounds gorgeous. Sounds really beautiful.
Thank you.
And so how did you meet Desmond Tutu?
We met in 1977, so that's about 33 years ago. A college professor served on the board of the South African Council of Churches with him. He was leading that organization at the time, and it had been a very tumultuous time in South Africa. In 1976, hundreds of school children were massacred in the streets of Soweto and other places around the country for peacefully protesting apartheid and demanding an equitable education. And then the following year, in 77, I was in college, and the most important black South African leader who had emerged since Mandela was imprisoned was named Stephen Biko. And Biko was detained by the government and murdered by them while in police custody. And the country was just, I mean, given what had happened the year before with the massacre of school kids around the country and ongoing action against black school children, the country was just in a state of explosiveness when Biko was murdered. And the government issued a decree that made it illegal for any public gatherings of more than three people to take place. So, you know, if you were planning your family barbecue in a you know, lovely state park like, I don't know, Discovery Park or something, and there were more than three of you, it would have been an illegal gathering. So I put together an eight-day fast and prayer time at the college that I was at, Rhodes University in South Africa. And we had a group who fasted for 8 days and prayed for the country and for an end to the violence and for a democratic path. And we engaged in conversation as we supported each other through those 8 days. And then one day during the fast, we also organized a protest to circumvent this ban on public gatherings. And so the custom of the university was that you would have to go to dinner on weeknights dressed in academic, you know, regalia. So you wore an academic gown and the guys wore, you know, a jacket and tie. And so we hit upon this idea of having people dress in their academic regalia, and one person at a time process from the gates of the university down the main street of the town to the doors of the cathedral, and then back up on the other side carrying a black wreath. And that protest went on for days and was picked up in the South African media. And my photograph was featured in many photographs in many papers around the country, which led to my being on the radar screen of the secret police in South Africa, which was not a desirable thing at that time in the country's history. And then we decided, I had this crazy idea, and I said to the group as we were meeting for meditation time one morning, I said, what if we went to Biko's funeral? And his funeral was being held in a town several hundred miles away in a football stadium. And so we rented a bus. And I think the important thing about that for me was that, you know, we were spiritually present through the fasting and the prayer. And it seemed to me that to be spiritually present with a situation and in the reality of what was going on in the country and in someone's death also meant that we needed to be physically present, that it was important to be there. So we rented a bus, and we were probably among 100 or 200 white South Africans in a crowd of, I think there were 30 or 33,000 people for his funeral. And one of my professors was part of the group, and I was just, the funeral lasted all day. It was a very African-style funeral, a full-day event. And there was speaker after speaker from the organizations that Biko founded. And then this little man came out, and he started to implore the crowds not to use violence. And he said, if we use violence, we'll become just like the people who killed Biko, and we will lose our humanity. And we need to find another way. There is a way of love. Put down any thoughts of weapons. There is another way to overcome this terrible thing called apartheid. And he kept saying to people, remember that God loves you, and remember that you are sacred. And that man was Desmond Tutu. And he had the crowds eating out of the palm of his hand. And I remember on the way back talking about him, and my professor said, you and Tutu need to meet. And he said, I will arrange it. So several months later, he and I met for the very first time in his offices in Johannesburg and began a relationship that has lasted for 33 years.
That is wonderful. What an amazing story. And we're so grateful that you're here safely, you know, in the United States.
Me too.
and do you travel to South Africa now? Have you been back?
Well, you know, after Mandela was released from prison in the early 90s, it was possible for all political exiles to return without the threat of imprisonment.
And oh, wonderful.
So I've gone back almost every year since then, and we'll be back there at the end of this year. And I have a mother who's still alive, and, of course, many friends and family. And
wonderful.
And it's fascinating to see this once repressive police state as a burgeoning democracy with the institutions of civil society being built and people of many races still on the journey to discovering this truth that we're not marked by what divides us, but by what unites us.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear that and grateful that you get to visit often and see your homeland. That's fantastic. One of the things that we do here on the show, too, is we listen to callers who call in, and I asked you before we went live if you would also give your opinion, your insight. So we're going to go ahead and open up the phone lines and see what callers have to say.
Great.
All right. Go ahead, Eric. Who do we have?
All right. Today, we're going to talk to Brandy calling from Auburn.
Hi, Brandy. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Great. Thank you. So what advice what is the situation in your life that's requiring some advice?
Well, after listening to that enormous story, it seems so small in comparison, but wow, what a story to hear about Robert Taylor. I'm sitting here wondering, like, wow, everything his eyes have seen. Anyway.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, thank you for sharing.
It's good to hear your voice, Brandy.
Thanks, and thanks for assisting in the Seeds of Compassion. I was lucky to attend, and I can't even describe the experience and being in a huge arena, and it felt very powerful, so thank you. Okay, sorry, I'm a little nervous. So I guess over the last year, I've been trying to explore what I should do with my life. I completed a graduate degree a year ago, and just feel kind of confused and stagnant, and concurrently, I've had ear problems over the last probably 15 months, and I've seen a slew of doctors, including a specialist, and still to no avail, I continue to have problems, and part of me wonders if they're similar, this, you know, stagnation, congestion, or if my body's trying to tell me something and I'm not listening. I guess so. I'm just feeling stuck and a little congested or constipated.
Did you want to go ahead and say something to her, Robert?
Well, I just, what I'm hearing, Brandy, and just thank you for your comments, and it's wonderful to be able to chat with you. I'm hearing this deep awareness that you have between the spirit and the body and the mind, and I'm hearing you explore that, and so I suppose more than anything, I would encourage you to pay attention to that, and maybe what it is that your body is inviting you to pay some attention to during this time. I know that that there are moments in my life when there are physical manifestations that are very painful or difficult to deal with. And that sometimes, not always, but sometimes, it is perhaps the universe's way of reminding me that there is something else that I need to be paying attention to as well, that the physical manifestation is not in isolation with my spirit and my mind.
That's so beautifully well said, Robert. That's beautiful. And I think, Brandy, you answered your question, at least part of your explanation, when you said that there's something you need to be listening to. And, you know, since you've already been to the doctor and you've had things checked out and this still isn't resolved, I think there's something that you're not listening to that you actually already know. What's your graduate degree in?
It's applied behavioral science.
Uh-huh, right. Right. Well, here's my take on it, you know, when I'm looking at you. First of all, you love people. You have one of the gifts that Robert has, actually. You have the ability to see the beauty inside an individual, regardless of what they do or don't do or what they have done historically. You have this ability. It's a gift, I believe. And so I think working with people, at least from my perspective, would be really great for you. I just think you need to take it outside of the box. And, you know, when we look at someone like Robert, who's done that with his career and his life, you know, that you can create it to be any way you want it to look. It doesn't have to be, you know, connected to the way society accepts behavioral scientists or psychologists or priests or nurses like myself. You get to make it any way you want to that allows you to flow your wisdom and your connection with creation into the world as you decide how you want to help other people. So that's what I think.
Wow. Well, it's resonating deeply. I think that's exactly where I'm going, is what are the expectations around how things, and I know you hate this word, should be done,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, so living more into, I guess, my heart versus
yeah,
you know, some
and
invisible
I think
guidelines.
Robert's a great example of that. Robert, you are. You know, you're still living your principles and doing what you want at the highest level possible in a way that feeds you in every way possible and allows you to continue to do the work of spreading compassion and helping us to open up
yeah.
our eyes. Yeah, it's beautiful.
You know, Brandy, I would just add to that, you know, I do a lot of work in workshops with people on how we learn to discover and trust our own voice and our imagination. And I think sort of tied to that is being connected and in tune with our intuition. And because I think the three really sort of form a landscape together, voice and imagination and intuition. And I'm hearing in you a strong intuitive understanding and awareness. And I use an image often with people who think in sort of more traditional religious terms of, you know, some of the language that's used about being made in the quote-unquote image of God or a creator or of the holy. And I invite people to play with the fact that what if we replace image with, you know, no matter what you think of the creation stories that exist in many, many religious traditions, whether you take them literally or metaphorically, what if you replaced image with imagination and begin to think of yourself as being part of the imagination of the universe or of the holy or of the one who creates? And there's work around that can really sort of lead you or lead people into a really open and freeing space. And I think the other part of it is learning to listen and trust that voice speaking inside you is an authentic voice and is sometimes the voice of the universe or the holy. I was doing a workshop a few months ago in Cleveland, Ohio, and one of the people in the workshop stood up at one of the break sessions, and she wanted the whole group to hear it. And she said, "I've been practicing centering prayer for decades." And she said, "Until today," she said, "I've always believed that I was listening for the voice of God or the holy outside of myself."
Mm.
And she said, "I've suddenly had this incredible awakening that voice is also heard within my own life."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's beautiful.
So I say all of those you know, things to you about voice and imagination and intuition because I think they're part of where I was hearing Marie suggest that you might continue to explore things.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Brandy, for calling in. That was
Thank
a
you both.
Great
I appreciate
question.
It.
Have a wonderful day.
Thank you. You also.
Wonderful. That was great. Thank you, Robert. You're amazing. Fabulous.
Well,
thank you.
So are you.
Thank you. We're going to go ahead and take a break here on the Remenu Cherry Show, and we will be right back with Robert Taylor. So welcome back, Robert. So it sounds like some of the sirens have calmed down in the background.
Yes. Yeah. I'm glad about that.
Yeah. It does make it interesting, though, for live radio. I actually enjoyed all the noise. I just imagined you sitting on top of the building. You said you were in the Rockefeller building, actually.
I am at Rockefeller Center. Yeah.
Yes. And so I was imagining that and, you know, the sirens going back and forth and just a normal day in a very, very large city, much larger than our city for sure. And when we were off air, I asked you what you wanted to talk about, and I said, well, you know, maybe we'll bring it up towards the end, but I think it's just appropriate right now. You talked about wanting to discuss the light within us. Do you want to talk more about that?
Yeah, I was thinking actually about delight. You know, it's just become one of my own daily practices. It's really a way of being mindfully aware for me during a period, or began to be during a period in which my daily life felt utterly consumed by work. And I think so many of us have been at that place. And there wasn't a dramatic awakening for me, but one morning I was out on my, you know, morning walk, and I realized that I was listening to the sounds of birds chirping, and that there was a real sense of delight in me. And I became aware that for weeks I'd been listening for the birds at sunrise each day. And on those morning walks, I was taking for granted the promise of their sound. And so I began, instead of taking it for granted, to really begin to pay attention to the harmonies of the birds. And I found myself offering thanks for the gift that they give me every day. And I think what was happening for me was a pathway was opening of naming the moments of delight that punctuated each day. And, you know, my own feelings of being overwhelmed by work challenges began to shift. Now, the core issues about work needed to be addressed, but my own way of approaching each day had a really perceptible shift to it. And at the time, I was involved in planning the event that you referred to earlier, the Seeds of Compassion, which drew over 150,000 people to a series of gatherings and programs in Seattle to learn and discuss what it means for each of us to be compassionate. And I have a story from that event that for me speaks volumes about incorporating delight into the practices of our daily grounding. I was, during that event, privileged to host and lead a conversation between His Holiness the Dalai Lama and Archbishop Desmond Tutu. And there were about 400 people attending the breakfast at which they'd hear these, you know, two iconic people talk about compassion with one another. And we knew that the Dalai Lama would arrive a little late because of his morning meditation time. So Tutu and I started the conversation, and then the Dalai Lama walked into the room earlier than expected. And he came up onto the stage and sat in the chair immediately to the right of Desmond Tutu. And so I ask you to imagine as you listen to this, two chairs, and Tutu's the one. And
I'm sitting on the edge of my chair right now in the studio.
There, and Tutu was making some pleasantries about, you know, how good it was to see this old friend of his, because they've obviously known each other and done work together for decades. And then while he's, you know, being nice to the Dalai Lama, the Dalai Lama starts moving his left elbow towards Tutu and poking him in the ribs, not once or twice, but repeatedly. And then Tutu looked at him and said, "What are you doing?" And His Holiness continued to poke Tutu in the ribs, and then he said something like, "You've got fat. You put on weight." And then they both just collapsed into peals of laughter, and it was like watching two impish school children. And the breakfast guests weren't sure how to respond. You could feel them almost like holding a pause button. And then Tutu said to the Dalai Lama, "You'd better behave yourself. Start acting like a holy man." And with that, the audience realized that it was okay to laugh, and they joined in with the laughter. But, you know, with all of the serious and weighty matters that these two Nobel Peace Prize laureates deal with, that moment at breakfast was a window for me into our willingness to find something to delight in every single day. And no matter the weightiness of our workload or perhaps feeling helpless about something, our engagement with life itself is changed when we begin to cultivate delight. And it could be something as simple as that experience of mine of realizing how much the sound of singing birds at sunrise meant to me. But we begin to think of ourselves and others differently when we begin to really mark and pay attention to and be aware of the delight.
Oh, that's beautiful. What a wonderful story and a great reminder. I like the idea of, you know, taking notes of what delights you throughout the day. It's certainly what gets me through the day is the little things that, whether it's a hummingbird or beautiful green plants in my office, you know, being able to connect with them for just a moment and feel their mastery. I find it delightful. That's a wonderful reminder.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
So we're going to go ahead and go back to the phone lines.
All right. Let's talk to Anne in Covington.
Hi, Anne. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Great, thank you. What can we do for you?
Hi. I've just really enjoyed listening to the show today, and I was calling to see if you could tune in to my son.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
His name is Andrew. He's 18 months old. We just came back from the doctor. They did x-rays on his foot and his legs, and it looks like the growth plates in his ankles and or in his ankle on his left leg, and his knee on his left leg are they're off.
Mm-hmm.
And so they did blood tests to see if something else is going on, like he's missing some nutrients or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just wondering.
Yeah, yeah. Robert, did you want to say anything?
Please go ahead.
Okay, all right. Well, first of all, I know that you're scared and sad because I can feel it. It's really heavy. You know, reminds me of the days when my children were much, much younger. Is this your first child?
No, my second.
Your second, yes. Yeah. So my heart goes out to you. With, you know, the heaviness that you're feeling right now and the worry and the concern about what's going on. You know, one of the things that I've learned and we're all learning is that we come to Earth for all kinds of reasons, you know, and that sometimes things that look like, you know, like, oh, my gosh, this is really not what we wanted to have in our life or not something that we hoped to experience. Whenever those experiences show up in my life and what I hope to encourage with others is that there's blessings in everything. So
right.
You haven't got any diagnosis yet, right? They're
right.
Not sure what's going on. So why don't we spend some time, because feeding the body with energy is very, very helpful, right? And
okay.
So, and I understand your pain and I don't mean to take it away at all.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I want you to be present with whatever you're feeling. But what I think needs to happen at this moment or at some moments throughout the day until you get to talk to your doctors again is all the things that you appreciate about your son and every moment that you've had with him, even the moments and up into his delivery, just really spending time appreciating him. Because if indeed there is something to do with his bones, let's say, they could be here for very important reasons for his own growth and his own development. I think what's hard for parents and was challenging, and I'm sure is for me, is looking at my children as individuals. You know,
right.
That they've come here for their own unique growth here on this planet, you know, for reasons that I don't even know, that are beyond anything that I could possibly fathom. And so when things happen in our lives, if we can for a moment step into that, their mystery and their enormity of their soul and celebrate that for a moment, I think that can help change the tide of what's coming up. Is what I'm feeling. So
okay.
I think that's going to help you feel better. And then, of course, when you're with your baby, which is a lot right now, just because of his age, there's going to be a different type of energy rather than, oh, my gosh, we're scared to pieces, you know, right now.
Right.
Okay. Robert, do you have anything you want to add?
No, I would just firstly agree with everything that you've said. And Anne, I certainly hear in your voice, obviously, your deep love and your concern and your fears for your son. I will certainly keep you in my own thoughts in the days ahead. Listening to and being aware of that energy in your son may well become part of his healing.
Yes, yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, beautiful. So, you know, you have a beautiful, gorgeous baby boy, and we're all sending him tons of love and healing to every cell in his body.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you so much, Annie, for calling in.
Thank you.
And thanks, Robert. That was lovely. And so we have another caller on the line.
We've got Dee in Seattle.
Hi, Dee. How are you?
I'm just fine. Thanks for taking my call, Marie. Robert, what an inspiration. Thank you.
Thanks, Dee. Good to hear you.
Yes, I'm calling. There's so much of what you said that I can apply to my life and so forth, but right now I feel that my energy wants to move, and I don't know if I'm going through a clearing. Lots of emotions and past issues are coming up. I'm trying to allow and trust and get back into the flow of things, but I don't feel quite like myself. I feel kind of off, and maybe that's a good thing and maybe not. I'm not sure.
Robert, please go ahead. I can hear your wisdom echoing from New York.
Well, Dee, I, as I hear you describe all of that, I get a strong sense that you are also someone who is deeply intuitive and deeply aware of the energy fields and consciousness in your own body and being. And so I suppose I would say that's really important in terms of what it is that you're being invited to enter into. because I do believe that in those moments that they are often moments of some new birthing in us, perhaps a stepping beyond some enclosure that we're not even there, and we're not even aware of it being an enclosure in our life that keeps us perhaps from ourselves or from another person. And so those moments in my experience have often been invitations to open the enclosure, to walk across a line that we or sometimes a line that others have drawn around our life, and perhaps some messages that were embedded in us as children or long, long time ago, of people saying, you know, if only you were, or you shouldn't think about that. And these moments are often invitations to walk beyond those lines and enclosures. So I would just offer that to you for your own awareness and meditative time.
Wonderful. I think, and I can hear the audience, other people listening. You know, one of the things I love about callers calling in, because I think it takes a lot of courage to ask these personal questions.
Yes.
On the air. And their questions help so many other people that are listening. And so, Dee, I absolutely love your question. So here's what I was thinking, Dee, is that I think you've been on the precipice of many things many times in your life. Is that true?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And for some reason, perhaps you don't always jump off the cliff. Is that true?
Yes.
Yeah. Because I had a whole video in my head while I was listening to Robert. And so here's what I'm going to invite you to do. Of course, you don't have to do anything I say ever. But I'm going to invite you, while you're in this incredible opening where you're feeling that energy again, that push and that invitation, that excitement that feels even a little confusing and has you maybe slightly disoriented at moments, which is really healthy, actually, when people are shifting, is that I'd love for you to perhaps say a mantra. And the mantra would be, and you could repeat it, I'm willing to do whatever it takes to become more of my amazing self. And so that's what I would love for you to do, so that you'll kind of get out of the way and surrender from whatever, you know, historically has stopped you from jumping off the cliff. Because when you jump off the cliff, there are beings to catch you. You know, it's like you don't hit the rock bottom. You don't go into a bottomless sea. You're actually held by creation. So that's what I would suggest that you do.
Well, I think that what you said is just perfect. And when Robert talked about enclosures and coming from your childhood and went to cry because you hit it on the head, and three, you were right on. I need to pick up.
Anytime. Well, thank you so much for calling in, and we're so lucky to have Robert on the show with us today.
Thank you very much, both of you.
Thank you.
Bye.
So, Robert, in your book, this new book that's coming out, so hopefully the plan is in the beginning of the new year, which is a perfect time, right?
Yeah.
A New Way to Be Human, 7 Spiritual Pathways to Becoming Fully Alive. Is it true that you you bring passages and information from multiple religious affinities? Is that true?
You know, my own grounding and tradition is that of Christianity, and I think probably a very generous understanding of the person of Christ as a person of very inclusive embrace, and what that means in terms of how we live compassionate lives and seek justice, and so that's certainly my own grounding. And as you know, I am a priest in the Episcopal tradition, and that's part of who I am.
But you're also not like any priest I've ever spoken to.
I need to introduce you to some.
I would love that. That would be wonderful.
But over the decades, I've, in working in the New York area and certainly in Seattle, have done a lot of interfaith work, and have been very, very aware of the way in which my own grounding has been deeply enriched and enhanced by wisdom and insight and stories from many other traditions. And so certainly the book draws on some of that wisdom, but the book is also filled with stories, certainly some pivotal stories from my own life, and what those have led me to believe and see about the pathways, the seven pathways to becoming fully alive that I believe exist for each of us. So I think that whether someone has a particular religious tradition or puts themselves in the category of being spiritual but not necessarily religious, mm-hmm. I think there's some significant substantive material in the book and practical exercises and action steps for people to take in their daily living.
I love homework. Yeah, I'm so excited. I'm really looking forward to this book coming out.
Good.
And it even says here that Desmond Tutu called this book a must-have for anyone on a spiritual path in a time when people are searching for values and meaning to one's life.
Yeah, well, he has been very generous in his foreword to the book, and I'm just honored and flattered that he's done that and that he's so enthused.
Great. And so what's been your favorite part of writing your book?
That's a great question. I don't think anyone's ever asked me that. I think the pulling together of some of those core stories from my own life that have really shaped and formed me, but thinking about the ways in which those stories are, you know, while they're my stories, on many levels they're also the stories of each of us. And so the stories, when you ask about what's been the most interesting or exciting part, is to think about the stories that people can connect with and say, well, my experience may have been, you know, decidedly different, but yeah, I understand that. I really connect with that because of, you know, my experience of whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, that's been a lot of fun. And then, of course, it's been fun to have people read and engage with the manuscript and take all of that wonderful, critical, helpful feedback and suggestions. So that's been made it a very interactive process and not a solitary one.
Right, which is lovely. Are you already thinking about your second book? Because I'm in your brain, and I'm actually seeing one. So are you thinking?
Yes, there is.
So, and do you have an idea what that's? Well, obviously you must.
Well, there are actually two ideas
that
are floating around. And so I'd love to be able to talk more with you about which one of those two it is, maybe a few months down the road.
Sure, I would love that. I would love that. Yeah, and you're just as excited about those projects, you know.
Oh, completely. And I spend a lot of time on the road, doing as you do, teaching workshops and lectures to a variety of groups. And for me, that's also really engaging because I tell some of the stories that are in the book and a whole host of other stories. And in the process, there's this wonderful interaction with audiences and these aha moments when people hear a story and it sparks some memory in them of something that they haven't thought about for a long time or something that was foundational in shaping them. Rather like, you know, the caller who calls into your show is often giving voice to what maybe scores of or hundreds of other people are wanting to ask. So it is in those workshop settings or retreats that I lead, and seeing people have those aha moments and some new insight and awareness about being fully alive themselves is for me just incredibly life-giving.
Ah, well, an absolute blessing, and it's been a pleasure having you on the show. And so you're going to be coming back to Seattle, I'm assuming, soon. Is that true?
Saturday.
Yeah. Well, we welcome you home with open arms and successful meetings while you're in New York, getting everything that you need done. And of course, you know, great successes you're finishing up with this book and those other books that I'm seeing in your brain that I find also very exciting. Yeah, I look forward to reading all of them. And thank you so much for taking a busy time out of your day and coming on the show. Thank you so much for your advice.
Thank you, and I just love your show and all the work that you're doing, and would invite folks to visit my website at robertvtaylor.com if they wanted to follow up with any questions or learn some more.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Alrighty.
Talk to you soon, I hope.
Yes, I would love that.
Okay.
Thank you, Robert. Have a great day.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. So that was just a blast having Mr. Taylor on the air with us, who's in New York doing business. And so we're just going to finish talking up a little bit here on the air before we finish our show.